be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaHealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to Breakthrough with your host, Michael Pippich. We'll tackle the central psychological issues of modern life, and we'll help you find insight and solutions in nearly every relationship in your life, bringing you discussions and perspectives that you're not likely to find anywhere else. Now, here's Michael Pippich.
For people who suffered through the crime of childhood sexual abuse, the desire to walk through adult life without ever having to look back at their abuse is strong. To think of it only as merely something bad that happens when you're growing up, but goes away when you don't feel anything anymore, buries the awful infection of psychological trauma that finds its way out in any number of symptoms, from depression, anxiety, and panic, to nightmares and flashbacks, from substance abuse and self-destructive behaviors, to strange medical and autoimmune diseases, or from the over-sexualization of relationships to the inability to connect with anyone in a safe and trusting manner. The Jerry Sandusky case and a long list of victims of clergy abuse have alerted our social conscience to how widespread this crime is and how devastating the institution of secrecy and taboo that protects the abuser can also be. But there is a path to healing. Breaking that silence with trained professionals and other survivors of abuse in a trusting environment and the violence, secrecy, and the threats that often accompany victims mentally throughout their lives. No matter how many years may have passed, it's never too late, or for that matter, never too soon, to build safe relationships with self and others toward the health and freedom that is the survival of childhood sexual abuse. Joining me today is Allison Von Terry. Allison is the executive director of the Wings Foundation, a private nonprofit agency founded in 1982. Their mission is to break the cycle and heal the wounds of childhood sexual abuse by providing support services, advocacy, and education to adult survivors. She has served as a project manager for the Victim Services Project of the International Association of Chiefs of Police and has managed multiple national programs on victim services. She joins me today from her office in Denver, Colorado. Allison, welcome to Breakthrough.
Michael, thank you so much for having me.
And also joining me is Meg Knoll. Meg is an adult survivor of incest. She is a registered nurse and a member of the Wings Foundation Speakers Bureau. Her mission is to inform and support others by sharing her personal story, and she's here today to inspire us as well. Welcome, Meg.
Thank you, Michael. I'm glad to be here today.
Great. Allison, Meg, and I will discuss the problem of childhood sexual abuse, along with tackling some of the myths and misconceptions often associated with it. But also importantly, we'll look at how adults who were victimized can overcome this trauma while learning how other communities can embrace healing from abuse as well. First of all, Allison, most people, I believe, are now pretty familiar with the problem of childhood sexual abuse, but I think a lot of parents and other adults still think in terms of teaching their kids only about stranger danger, like don't get in a car with someone you don't know, that sort of thing. But the problem is far more prevalent than that, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I think it is easy to think of some of the high-profile cases like clergy abuse and even Penn State when people think about sexual abuse. And it's easy also to forget that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 4 men by the age of 18 have suffered some form of childhood sexual abuse. And we know that many of the perpetrators of childhood sexual abuse are people that are known and loved and trusted, both by the children and also by the parents of survivors. So they can be the parents, they can be caregivers, like babysitters, and they can also be trusted adults, friends of the family, coaches, religious leaders. Yeah, so I think the trust and is important to remember, because that's how they have access to children.
So it's typically the person that's familiar within their functioning lives on a daily basis. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And somebody who has access. So it's someone who the family thinks is a good person to be around, whether that's because there's a familiar relationship and they're an uncle and they're convenient and they can do babysitting, or they can watch the kids, or they've become a special friend of the family through some grooming behavior. So, I think you're absolutely correct.
And you said 1 in 4 children. Is that correct? 1 in 4?
1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys.
I think people will find that as a staggering statistic. I mean, again, I think we are familiar with the problem from the media standpoint, but you're talking about 20 to 25% of children.
Absolutely. And, you know, these numbers have a very real impact in terms of that we have 1 in 4 adults, 1 in 4 women walking around with trauma that's unresolved from childhood. It's an incredible number, and it's also an incredible impact both on our society and on our families.
So tell us more about your program at the Wings Foundation and what the mission is a little bit more, and what kind of programs and services you provide.
Absolutely. So the Wings Foundation is designed to offer support to adult survivors, so anyone who's over 18, of childhood sexual abuse. And we define sexual abuse fairly broadly. It's an unwanted sexual act or encounter that someone had when they're a child. So this can involve, you know, often people think of sexual abuse as being raped as a child or rape. This is also being forced to watch pornography with someone at a young age, inappropriate touching, those kinds of things that feel icky to a kid, and maybe the child doesn't know how to deal with it, or creates some sort of early sexualization of children. And the Wings Foundation is really designed to help adults find support around some of the challenges that they face that are a result of long-term trauma that comes from childhood sexual abuse. Primarily, we do support groups. We have 28 support groups now in the Denver metro area. A couple of them are specialty groups. We have 4 for men, 18 for women, 2 for Spanish language specifically, and then a couple of specialty groups outside of that. And we really focus on the members of our groups providing support to each other. It's a therapist-facilitated group, so we do have therapists there to sort of hold the space and keep it safe and make sure that the survivors that are in there are able to overcome triggers. And yet, it is about the survivors being with each other and recognizing that they're not alone and being able to overcome shame and difficulty. So that's what Wings does.
It seems to me that the last thing that many victims want to do is to talk about their abuse with others, especially people that they find are new people or certainly strangers to them. Tell us how your members typically come to your program and then what they can expect.
That's a great question. So we find that generally we have 2 ways of getting group members. One is when, and is fairly common, it's about 50-50, where survivors have been working with a therapist for a really long time. They feel maybe a lot of shame and a lot of guilt, and their therapist, after working with them for a while, has been able to say that, you know, maybe you're ready to share your story with other people in a controlled and safe environment. And so therapists then refer their clients to us as a next step in their healing journey. The other group of people generally that we get are people who are kind of at the end of their rope. They have been struggling with feelings. In some cases, they have remembered their sexual abuse throughout their childhood, but in many cases, they haven't. They're realizing that something happened to them. They don't know how to deal with it. In some cases, they're depressed. In some cases, they're in crisis. And they find us through a referral or on the web and call, and really they're looking for something and they don't know what. And when we're able to get them then into a WINGS group, in both cases, really, when we're able to get them into a WINGS group where they sit down in a group and they say, I am just having trouble. I'm getting so angry at my loved one. And someone else in the group says, oh, I hear you. I have been struggling with that for months. There is something incredibly powerful about that sort of meeting of the minds.
And doesn't that really begin to break that sense of taboo and secrecy that so many victims carry throughout their lifetime?
Absolutely. I felt like that was one of the most important things that you said in your introduction, that the idea that child abuse is something that people should feel ashamed of. I mean, that is a reality, and we know that people feel ashamed and also some level of guilt and complicity maybe in it. And these support groups go such a long way in redefining, A, who should be ashamed of the abuse, because it certainly shouldn't be the victim, it should be the perpetrator, and building a sense of community and a sense of acceptance, and that what happened as a child is not the result of an act of a child, and it is something that can be overcome, and that people can become stronger based on it. And we call our group members survivors for a reason, because it takes a lot to make it through childhood sexual abuse, and we really appreciate that and know how strong our group members are.
Do you typically support different approaches and services between the female survivors and male survivors?
You know, our support groups are generally the same. We have the same model. So there is a WINGS model, a support group model, and sort of most specifically, it is therapist-led. We feel like that is at WINGS. We feel like that's really important. There are great peer support programs out there. That's not necessarily ours, so that survivors feel safe. And it follows a fairly structured system. And so that structure remains the same, whether it's a women's group or a men's group. And at WINGS, our support groups, we have support groups for people who identify as female, and they're facilitated by someone who identifies as female. And then our male groups are facilitated by someone who's male. So the structure is the same. The facilitators interact, I would say, in a slightly different way. I think that the shame that men feel and the unwillingness to speak can be harder to overcome, where we as a culture are accepting and understanding and are beginning to understand that women have been victims of all kinds of sexual abuse and sexual assault for years. It can be more challenging for men. And so there are different challenges, but the structure of the group remains the same.
Well, that's terrific. And we're going to take just a short break here in a moment. When we return, we'll talk more with Allison, but we're also going to speak with Meg Knoll, a survivor of child sexual abuse who's also from WINGS, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about her personal story. So we'll do that right after a short break. This is Breakthrough. I'm Michael Pippich, and we'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
No matter what you have tried, healing is always possible. Learning about healing, what it is, and what it can do brings a much clearer understanding of the process. Listen for the Healing Power Hour with Suzanne Hill. Our program will help you understand your own body so that you can understand how you can reduce or eradicate any negative health issues that you might be dealing with. Healing is energy-based, and by learning how it works, you help yourself. Tune in to the Healing Power Hour, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Explore the power of natural healing with Howard Strauss. Join us each week for an informative program that'll help you learn effective healing methods using natural remedies. Howard's guests include top researchers, authors, and experts who will share their views on a variety of natural products and healing methods that really work. Tune in to The Power of Natural Healing with Howard Strauss, Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
If you have a loved one that is undergoing treatment for substance abuse or mental illness, you owe it to them and yourself to tune in to One Hour at a Time with host Mary Woods. This compassionate and educational talk show will help you help those that you love by better understanding their condition and their personal recovery process. Tune in every Monday at 12 noon Pacific Time to One Hour at a Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Recovery begins this hour.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Breakthrough with Michael Pippich. You're invited to participate in the discussion on today's program. Please feel free to send an email to Michael at michaelpippich.com. That's Michael at michaelpippich.com. Now, back to Breakthrough.
I'm talking today with Allison Von Terry, Executive Director of Wings Foundation, and with Meg Knoll, a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, also from Wings, located here in Denver, Colorado. Allison, how can the listeners contact your organization?
Well, they can get online and go to www.wingsfound.org or give us a call at 303-238-8660. And if they'd like more information about our groups, we'd be happy to give them that. If they want to get into a group, we'd love to do an intake with them. And if there are professionals out there that would like training or education, we have an education wing, and we're happy to come out and provide education to therapists, to medical professionals, anybody that come religious leaders, anybody that comes in contact with sexual abuse survivors. We would love to make sure that they know that they have a place and a home at Wings.
And also, you provide service in Spanish as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we have a bilingual program manager who can work, can do both trainings in Spanish, but also we run groups in Spanish for our monolingual Spanish-speaking population.
Excellent. Meg, welcome again to the show.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your history? I want to especially highlight how someone like yourself moves in her life from victimization to survival.
Okay. I think in order to understand some of the movement, it's real important that you understand some of the things that actually happened. So I wanted to talk about that first. The sexual abuse started for me when I was 4 to 5 years old, and it lasted until I was 7. I'm 72 years old now. I still experience some of the effects of the abuse, but much less than I did as a child and in my young adulthood. My perpetrator was Fred, my mother's second husband. It started with Fred fondling me, and when I told my mother about that, Fred threatened me. He said that he would beat my mother and me if I told her again, and he told me that it would be my fault if my mother got hurt. So at the age of 5, I felt terribly responsible for my mother, and so when she asked if Fred had ever abused me again, I lied to her. Sexual abuse became worse over time. He orally raped, beat, and choked me. I didn't tell my mother again, but I did tell a neighbor, who I think did the worst thing possible. She told Fred. She didn't believe me, and neither did my mother. So when I was 5, I knew that I was terribly alone, all alone. Fred started to isolate me further from my mother. For example, one of the things that he did was he forced me to wet my pants in front of him, drop my wet clothes around my feet, and stand there naked until my mother saw me. Fred acted as though he was puzzled by my behavior, and my mother became very angry. She screamed at me to get out and to put clean clothes on. She thought that I was the one who had sexually acted out. He created more isolation for us by moving us to a very remote area in the woods in Maine. No car, no telephone. The family and friends, we literally disappeared one day. We were missing for about a year and a half. I wasn't allowed to attend school. And from that point on, believe me, I was silent. Fred used drugs and alcohol, and that just led to increased violence. So I became very good at watching for the first sign of violence. Dish hitting the wall, someone yelling. And at the first sign, I would run outside. I'd call my dogs, and we would hide in the woods until I knew that he was drunk and I could return home. Sometimes he would just pick up a gun and point it at me. I knew instinctively when he did this to just be very still. And fortunately, he never did actually shoot it. The very first support person that I ever had, I say person, but it was actually my dog. I was 6 or 7. Fred attempted to shove me off a train trestle that was over a river, and I yelled, "Sick 'em!" And Top, my dog, attacked Fred, and I was able to get away. The second support I got was actually from Fred's father, who lived with us. He was educated by Fred, but Fred felt that he could confide in him that he was going to murder me, and he told him how he was going to do that. Fred's father cared about me, and I think that overrode his fear. And so he was able to convince my mother to contact my grandmother immediately, which she did. My very biggest support was my grandmother. She's my hero. She appeared one day soon after that contact from my mother, and she managed to get Fred to agree to taking me on a 2-week vacation with the promise that she would bring me back. Fred was absolutely enraged and out of control, but she stayed very calm, and she managed to get me away from Fred before he really could get his thoughts together about what to do. I never saw Fred again, and I lived with my grandmother until I was an adult.
And that's when you were 7 years old?
That's when I was 7. As an adult, I experienced different things that helped me. One big factor was years of psychotherapy, individual psychotherapy, medical help that I had to get for problems with fibromyalgia, and WINGS. WINGS has been very, very important in my recovery. My individual therapy, I was very skeptical and resistive to therapy at first. Even though I worked in psych at the time as a nurse, I was still very skeptical about it and resistive.
Meg, how old were you at the time that you entered individual therapy?
I was probably around 25, I would say.
And what prompted you to seek therapy then?
It was kind of the going thing that anybody who did therapy should be in therapy. And so my work environment certainly encouraged me to do it. But I also felt I had a lot of unresolved issues with my mother. She died before we ever had an opportunity to talk about anything that had happened between us with Fred. And so I needed to do something with the anger that I had built up and the guilt that I had felt, the shame I had felt, a lot of it related to my mother. And so that's why I went into therapy, too.
And you mentioned about fibromyalgia?
Yes, uh-huh.
When did you begin to notice those symptoms?
Oh, I noticed I was having some symptoms for a long time before it caused me any kind of a severe problem. But when I got to the point that I was experiencing extreme exhaustion and a lot of body pain that I, you know, seemed to come out of nowhere, and I went to a massage therapist, and no matter how hard that therapist worked with me, we could never seem to get things better. And I could hardly stand the massage therapist touching me even very lightly. And she said, I think you might have what they call fibromyalgia, and you ought to have this checked out physically. And my first reaction was, oh, I don't have that. Everybody has that these days. I'm not, that can't be right. But I went, and my doctor thought that my massage therapist was right on. And he said, one way we can find out quickly is, I think that you're sleep deprived, that you have been sleep deprived for a number of years. And I said, well, I sleep all night. He said, that doesn't matter. You're not sleeping deeply enough for your body to get the rest it needs, and it ends up resulting in pain for you and extreme exhaustion. So he put me on a sleeping medication, which I didn't want to take, but he convinced me to take it for 3 weeks to see if it made a difference. It made a difference in 3 days. And I have at times tried to go off that sleeping medication, but I'm still on it. I really can't seem to get along without it. I become hypervigilant at night, and I just do not sleep deep enough.
So you've experienced all the symptoms of post-traumatic stress?
A lot of them, yes, very much so.
Including flashbacks?
Flashbacks, yes. Flashbacks really affected me a lot. At school, in college, nursing school, and then later in my job. There could be situations that would, mostly with administration, because they were in power positions. If they did things in a certain way, they took too much control, were too directive, forced me to transfer jobs, that kind of thing. And I felt like I had no control over what was happening to me. If that was done by a male, supervisor, which in one case it was, and the female supervisors at the time were not very supportive. They were acted very passive, kind of looked the other way. I think he might have been a little intimidating to them, and I didn't get support that I needed from them. So all of that brought back flashes of what had happened before. And I felt like I, at the time, was standing on some kind of, you know how it is when you stand on the sand at the beach and the wave comes in and then takes the sand out from underneath your feet?
Yes.
And yet you're still standing on it. You know what that feels like? That's what I felt like going through one experience I had with that at work.
Well, and it appears to me, too, that at that point, that you were not conscious of the connection between that individual and your feelings, unresolved feelings towards Fred. But would you agree that unconsciously
right.
that began to stir within you?
Oh, definitely. And no, at first I was not aware. I didn't understand that I was in trouble. I didn't understand that I was known for my problem-solving skills and being able to teach that to other people. And I didn't recognize that I was no longer doing that, that I wasn't coping well. It wasn't until I was well into a very bad situation at work, to the point of almost getting fired, that I realized what the connection was. And even then had difficulty stopping the process from continuing.
The process, you meaning your symptoms?
My symptoms, the situation that experiencing that trauma over again. I was in a job of responsibility, supervising other people, working in a clinical setting, and there were actions that I did that were poor decisions. I couldn't take those back.
And I know, Allison, I can hear you want to jump in. We need to go to a break. So when we return, I'd love to get your response to what Meg has shared with us so far. Okay?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, you bet. And we will talk more about some of Meg's personal experiences from her adult survivor's point of view. And we'll do that after a short break. This is Breakthrough. I'm Michael Pippage. Please stay tuned.
Thank you.
opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Step into the doorway to conscious choice, greater health, and well-being. Attain the balance that you've been seeking. Tune in and turn on 1111 Talk Radio. Feed the mind. Embrace positively. Release the tension. Step out of fear. Host Simran Singh will help you broaden your mind and open your heart toward a greater understanding of how to take charge of your life. 1111 Talk Radio is here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on Seventh Wave Network. 1111 Talk Radio, because shift happens.
No matter what our age is, health deserves our utmost attention. But how do you achieve optimal wellness? Tune in to Ask Lorna Live. Your host, Lorna Vanderhaeg, will provide research-backed solutions that will have you feeling fit and fabulous. It all comes down to hormones. We'll show you how it works with mainstream medicine along with nutritional medicine. Listen for Ask Lorna Live every Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Health and wellness is about making lifestyle choices that make us feel good about ourselves. It's easier knowing what to do than it is doing it. Listen to The TAMS, Toward a Magnificent Self, Health and Wellness Show, with your host, Tammy Anastasia, M.A. Tammy will explore and uncover the answers to what gets in the way of our motivation. Through her expertise and occasional guest experts, Tammy will inspire and motivate you to make realistic lifestyle changes. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Breakthrough with Michael Pippich. You're invited to participate in the discussion on today's program. Please feel free to send an email to Michael at michaelpippich.com. That's Michael at michaelpippich.com. Now, back to Breakthrough.
Welcome back. I wanted to remind you listeners that you can get information on upcoming shows at my website, which is michaelpippich.com. And I'm here today again with Allison Von Terry and Meg Knoll of Wings Foundation, located here in Denver, Colorado. And Meg was just talking about her own personal story, moving from victimization to the survival of childhood sexual abuse. And I know, Allison, that you wanted to make a remark, so please feel free to give us some of your insights, and perhaps we'll return to Meg's story as well.
Great, thanks. I just wanted to say that, Meg, first of all, thanks for sharing, and also that Meg's experience, of course, she's looking back at her experience from years of healing, and yet it is so typical to have these feelings and not understand what's going on, and for life to feel a little bit out of control and flashbacks to happen and to feel sleepless. And I wanted to affirm that that's really typical of sexual abuse survivors, that those connections that, you know, at Meg's point, where after she's done a lot of healing, she can see the connections and she can see why things were triggering for her. But for people who are in the midst of it, it can feel, like Meg said, like this, a sand coming out from under you at the beach, where things just don't feel right. They don't make sense. Things feel like they're bigger than they really should be. And I wanted to say that that's real, and it can feel really difficult. It can make people feel like, you know, we hear sometimes survivors call in and say, "I think I'm going crazy," and we have to consistently reaffirm that they're not going crazy, and that their minds were built to contain the trauma until they're ready to let it out, and that maybe their body and their minds are telling them now that it's time. So I just wanted to mention that, because I feel it's really important.
That is very important. I agree. And I noticed that also in my practice and working with patients who experience, for whatever reason, post-traumatic stress, especially when their abuse and their trauma occurred in childhood. that while post-traumatic stress is a disorder and it is a disease of the mind, I also believe that there is a part of truth within each one of us that's buried deep within us. And that truth keeps knocking at the door for our attention. And it can be aroused by any number of situations. And I know, Meg, this is an excellent example that you present from your own life history about how that can happen. It's not always in personal relationships, although I want to get to that in a little bit. But also can be in work relationships where you, as an adult, go into a structured environment and you have a hierarchy where you have your boss, who's sort of like the surrogate parent. You have coworkers who are like siblings, or perhaps you even have people who report to you or sort of like your, surrogate children, if you will. And again, we don't think about this necessarily at a conscious level, but unconsciously this comes out. So my point is, and I think, Allison, you're picking up on this as well, that beyond just looking at these symptoms as something that need to be treated, and again, I'm all for treating them, whether it's with medication and so on, to alleviate a person's suffering, we have to pay attention to these because there are signs and signals of some truth that's emerging within our consciousness.
That's wonderfully said, wonderfully said. And I think that it is easy, particularly because of the shame and the guilt that survivors often feel, and that perpetrators make them feel there's something wrong with you, in some cases using religion, God doesn't love you. So this feeling that there's something wrong with them, and yet we know that there isn't anything wrong with them, and they're not crazy, and they're not, it is simply, like you said, truth knocking at the door and saying, look, we got stuff that we've got to take care of. So absolutely, yes, a million times yes.
And Meg, you mentioned about unresolved issues with your mother. I think the listeners could easily understand how you would feel about Fred after all of these many years, but perhaps not so much in terms of your mother's role in the abuse that you suffered at his hands. Can you address that a little bit more with us?
Sure. My mother, from the very beginning, was going through her own abuse. And in looking back, I can understand that. I remember as a child seeing fear on her face many, many, many times. That fear immobilized her. And in actuality, I felt like I was, in looking back, I was living with another child as opposed to a mother who was supposed to protect me. She did not protect me. And I don't know how to describe what it felt like at the age of 5 to realize that you had the perpetrator and another child there besides yourself and no one to take care of you. My mother was extremely passive. She wanted not to see the situation as it really was. Fred's father had to do a great deal of convincing of her for her to make a move. If it hadn't been for that, I probably would have been killed at the age of 7. I wouldn't be here today.
And Michael, if I can, it's worth bringing up that I think Meg's story really illustrates the impact of two different responses by the people that are around children. And adult survivors recognize it in a really visceral way, that that someone who could have potentially protected them didn't. And that has its own stuff. And then the impact of someone like Fred's father or Meg's grandmother, who it was probably pretty scary to come in and say, you know what? I'm taking her, and I'm taking her, and you're angry, and you're violent, and I'm still taking her.
And so, yes, and especially at that time in our social history.
Absolutely.
Yes. My grandmother tried to get other adult males in the family to go with her for support, and their families would not let them go because they felt it was too dangerous for them to go. So my grandmother came alone. And it's possible that if there had been a male with her, he might have seen that as more of a challenge than even my grandmother was. And it might have been a worse situation, actually.
Yes. Meg, tell us the first time you came to a group therapy session. What was that like for you? How did you feel?
The very first time, I felt like I would say, my thought was, I will say just enough in order to get the help I need, and then I'm out of here. I'm not going to reveal any more than I have to. And it took a number of years to get through layers of what it was that had happened in so many different circumstances. I would avoid, if possible, talking about the things that I was ashamed of and felt guilty about. And it was easy to talk about what Fred did, but it was very, very difficult if it stirred up any feelings of shame or guilt on my part. I would begin to skirt around that. So it took a long time.
So you were still blaming yourself at that time?
I was still blaming myself, yes. And when you got triggered, outside of therapy, after therapy was over, if you got triggered by something that occurred, you could easily get back into that feeling again. I'm not sure at the time I went into psychotherapy that psychotherapists really fully understood the impact themselves on an individual, the long-term effects on an individual with regard to child sexual abuse. How you could function so highly, which I did. I was a very high functioner in my job most of the time. But then when these backflashes would happen, it would be severe. And I would almost end up getting fired. So I would go from one extreme to the other. And I don't know that therapy was the most helpful in helping me to sort that out. It did help me learn how to manage many of, like, the long-term effects. I had panic attacks in which I couldn't breathe. I wouldn't go swimming because of pressure on the of the water on my chest. I wouldn't wear bright clothes or do anything that would make me stand out in a crowd for fear that Fred would find me. Therapy was able to help me to learn how to handle those situations, and eventually they resolve over time.
Did you realize at that time when you had started your treatment that the abuse that you suffered was actually a crime?
No, I did not. As a matter of fact, Allie and I were talking about this before this program started, and it wasn't until this year when I was 71, I'm 72 now. It wasn't until this year that I accepted the fact that I was a victim of crime, because it was very hard for me to accept the fact that my family fell into that kind of category, that there was somebody in my family or someone who had been welcomed into my family who was a criminal, and who did the things that Fred had done, or that my mother would be so unbelievably passive in doing anything to help me. I wanted to believe that my family was like what I thought everybody else's family was in the community. So I didn't want to admit that I was a victim of crime.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about that after the break. Yes, but Allison, I was going to ask you prior to our break here, do you find that similarly, I would imagine, with many of your members, do you not?
I absolutely do. And it is really an interesting thing, because if we tell the story, their own story about a child, and if it were happening right now, almost everyone says, yes, absolutely, that was a crime. But relating it to themselves when it's their own story, people say, well, you know, it was a really bad thing. It was not okay. But they can't necessarily say that was a crime. That was illegal. Really just saying it's a bad thing. And it is a fascinating, I think, challenge for law enforcement, for those of us in the victim services field, and also for survivors.
Do you get referrals directly from law enforcement, police or sheriffs, or from probation situations?
You know, very rarely do we. The cases in which we do, it is usually actually a child, it's a parent of a child. So a child who is being sexually abused and their parent is also a survivor, and their children's flashbacks get mixed up with the adult's flashbacks. And that can be a really hard time, especially if they're going through the court process, to be having really severe post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. And so those are times when we do sometimes get referrals, but very, very rarely do we get anything from law enforcement. And in fact, I would say in 2012, we didn't get any.
Okay. Well, again, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that after the break. And we will return with our final segment for today's program on survival of childhood sexual abuse on Breakthrough. I'm Michael Pipich, and we will be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
It's a beautiful day.
Do you look your best? Do you feel your best? While everybody ages, why does it seem to show more in some people than others? It could have to do with what's inside and how it affects you outside. Tune in to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. Their training in medicine and nutrition brings proven results with their patients, and now they're ready to bring that knowledge to you. We'll answer your questions and explore innovations in technology and medicine to keep you looking and feeling your best. Tune in Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
9 different energy systems make up the energy body. Energy is all around us and connects us. Energy exerts a major control over our biology and is a big reason why you should be tuning in to Energy Medicine and Optimal Health with your host, Dr. Ann Deatley. We'll explore energy balance techniques, tips, and patterns to keep your flow of energy optimal to maintain maximal health. By adopting these techniques, you will keep your energy body and physical body in harmony. Listen for Energy Medicine and Optimal Health, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Breakthrough with Michael Pipich. You're invited to participate in the discussion on today's program. Please feel free to send an email to Michael at michaelpipich.com. That's Michael at michaelpipich.com. Now, back to Breakthrough.
I've been talking today with Allison Von Terry, Executive Director of Wings Foundation, and Meg Knoll, a member of that organization who provides her personal insights into the crime of childhood sexual abuse and her journey from victim to survivor. And Allison, let's give that website and phone number again.
Great, thanks. Yes, it's www.wingsfound.org, and the telephone number is 303-238-8660, and we invite any therapists or survivors or other professionals to give us a call. We'd be happy to get someone in a group or also do education.
Okay, and I'll make sure, too, that that link and phone number is available on my website, michaelpipich.com, as well, okay?
Thanks so much.
You bet. We were talking a little bit about Meg in particular, and then in general, survivors who at least originally when they first enter into their treatment and their journey into survival, that they, typically they don't look at the abuse that they suffered as a crime. Do you ever, Allison, advocate that people pursue a legal or a criminal kind of endeavor on their own behalf, or do you kind of take that on a case-by-case basis?
I would say we take it on a case-by-case basis. So the Wings Foundation is really primarily about support and healing. And healing can look different for different people. And healing for many people is about finding a resolution. And so that can look like going through the court system. whether it is the criminal court system or the civil court system. It is a challenging system, and certainly a delayed report. And in our case, we don't usually see victims before 20 years after the event. So the last incident of abuse usually happens somewhere around 20 years prior to when we see them at WINGS, when they're ready to reach out for help. And so there are realistic challenges, and it isn't for us to say whether or not the right thing for them is to pursue criminal charges. I will say that we do find that many survivors find some resolution by making a report, particularly if in the case of their abuser, they think their abuser, for example, if it was their father and their father is now a grandfather, and there are other grandchildren or nieces and nephews in the family, that feels good and like a good resolution for them. But we don't advocate either direction for them.
So you help them to kind of choose their own course by looking at different options, different choices, and the potential consequences for those choices.
Exactly. We try to reflect as well as we possibly can what that process might look like for them and help them decide if it's healing and if it's not healing. Because, of course, as with any court process, there is no guarantee on what the resolution will be. We also coordinate really closely with many of the victim services programs in the Denver and in the Colorado area, and we have a network across the nation. And so if people are interested, we get them in contact with people, with organizations who really specialize in advocacy and law enforcement advocacy and court advocacy, so that they feel supported the entire way through, because that really is a part of the process. Whether there's a conviction or not a conviction on some levels, is only part of the goal of the healing, and really finding the voice, their voice, and feeling like they can speak out is almost a bigger part of the process. And so,
whatever contributes to their own sense of peace.
Exactly.
Meg, can you tell us a little bit more about, through your adult life, the effect of your abuse on your own personal relationships?
I think that I have been able to not necessarily have a wide circle of friends, probably because of trust issues, but I have a very few, very close friends. And one person who's been my friend for over 40 years, and we are as close today as we were 40 years ago. With regard to romantic kinds of relationships, I have not had a romantic relationship that has lasted up to this point in my life. And some of it has been because of the issues that I've had to deal with. In some cases, people have not supported what it is that I'm currently doing, the speaking out. They feel like that this is attention-seeking, don't see the strength that it takes to do this, and don't see how it's valuable to other survivors, even small children, people in the community, to learn more about this, and that's one of the reasons I speak out. But when someone gets involved with someone with a history of incest, there is that they have to be understanding of, for instance, being willing to support by listening to a story that you may have to tell, and you may have to tell it more than once. The average person is more likely to say to themselves, well, you already told me that once before. I don't need to hear that again. Mm-hmm. And they probably don't, but not understanding the necessity to say it again and sometimes again and again.
Do you have any children?
No, I don't. I wish I did, but I don't.
Well, it seemed to me that you've had obviously difficulties to be able to form those trusting relationships, but the relationships that you have had have been especially powerful for you, probably
very
for
much.
That reason. Yes.
Yes.
Allison?
Yeah, Yeah, and Michael, you know, I would add that relationships and challenges with relationships can look really different for different people, that people can have trouble with intimacy, survivors can have trouble with intimacy, and that it feels uncomfortable being intimate, whether that's physically or emotionally with other people, that relationships with family members or parents or people to whom they haven't disclosed, or their children, can be really challenging. You know, a child who's brought up, I was just talking with someone the other day who was saying, I feel really angry sometimes at my kids because they're allowed to get mad and they're allowed to throw a temper tantrum. And I wish that I had had that when I was a kid. And so that can look really different for different people. The Wings Foundation has created a loved ones group specifically for that reason, because we know that loved ones need a place to be able to say, like Meg said, for the life of me, they have told me the same thing 20 times. Do they think I don't get it? And to have other group members, just like in our survivors groups, be able to say, yeah, I hear you. Same thing happened to me yesterday. I thought I was going to explode. And to be able to say that in a place that feels comfortable and is venting, and yet recognizing that there's still love and compassion in the relationship, and that then they can come back and feel recharged and able to hear those stories again and again and recognize that it's a part of the healing process.
Well, let me just say to Meg very quickly, if I may, I think what you're doing is wonderful. I think what you're being able to share, that you have that courage, is not about something about seeking your own attention. It's about sharing with other people so that they connect their own individual stories and know that there is hope. So if that is your mission in life, well, I think that that's a beautiful thing. And I certainly hope that you take great personal pride in that, and that that continues to grow within you for many years to come. So I thank you very much for joining, and I wish you, Meg, great success. And Allison, thank you as well for joining us today and sharing with us more about Wings Foundation and being with us today to give our listeners a greater insight into child sexual abuse, but more importantly, how an adult can go about enriching and improving their lives beyond their trauma.
Thank you so much for having us, Michael.
Again, yes, Allison
Von
Terry.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Again, Allison Von Terry is the Executive Director of Wings Foundation, and Meg Knoll, a member of the Wings Foundation Speakers Bureau. Thank you both, and thank you for joining us today. Please check out michaelpipich.com for what's coming up on future shows on Breakthrough. Again, I'm Michael Pipich. Thank you very much, and I will see you again next week.
Thanks for tuning in to Breakthrough with host Michael Pipich. Please join Michael again next Thursday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We hope you have a great week.